Hello and welcome to the program. This is another episode for Beyond the Mekong, which is broadcast by The Diplomat. And with me today is Magnus Vasiesko, an associate professor with the Department of Anthropology at Cornell University. And we're going to be talking about all things Thailand, in particular the Uyghurs. Magnus, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, the deportation of the Uyghurs, you're quite vocal about that. Let's go back through it for the audience. And how do you view what happened from where you sit in New York?
Well, what happened was that in front of the entire world, there were these 40 Uyghurs kept in detention in Thailand for over 10 years after fleeing there, escaping China and coming to Thailand. It seems that they were on their way to Malaysia, which is a Muslim country. These are Muslims, and they wanted to seek refuge there. But they were apprehended in Thailand and then detained. And the detention continued for a very long time. Then, apparently under pressure from China to repatriate them to China, instead of handing these refugees over to some other country, or one could ask, why not accept them as refugees in Thailand? That question is also open. Instead of doing that, they repatriated them by force against their will, and the Thai government flew them back to China. It was extremely dramatic. One of the last days in February, the 27th of February, after having told the public in Thailand and the people that in Thailand that worried about the refugees' fate, after having told them that they would not repatriate them, they packed them up in the middle of the night and put them on buses with windows painted black so that journalists, media could not see what was happening. There were some media staking it out, so there are pictures of this shipment to the airport. And then they flew them to Xinjiang, to the city of Kashgar. And then the next stage in this was that they performed a welcome that had been arranged by the Chinese authorities. So Thai government officials that accompanied the refugees pretended to be meeting them and reassuring themselves that everything was okay with them. This is, of course, a performance with no basis in reality. We know that in China the authorities will stage things. It's documented in many other cases that this is how they do it.
Right.
But then there was yet another chapter in this which you have seen, which is that 2 weeks later, the Deputy Prime Minister and the Justice Minister of Thailand flew back there once again because of a lot of criticism in Thailand and from abroad also, again to perform this checkup on the refugees and pronouncing them safe and fine, going to the home of a refugee, sitting in the sofa, drinking tea, having people smile, having people express their gratitude, which of course is exactly what they would do. This is how these stage performances take place. And I would say it's one of the most shocking examples ever so far in our history of foreign officials going along with these kinds of stage performances and playing a part themselves in what is essentially a fake presentation akin to the forced confessions we have seen in China before.
Right, and it was embarrassing from the start. The word leaked out quite quickly that they were being repatriated, that they'd been snuck out of the detention centre where they were being held, and journalists seemed to be able to follow it minute by minute and were posting this on social media, with the Thai government still insisting nothing was really going on.
Yeah, there were several things about this that caught my eye. The current prime minister said that the fact that they were walking to the plane by their own will and did not have to be dragged, this proved that they were being repatriated voluntarily, which to me sounded outlandish. Of course, they would walk because they had to face the fact that now they were being repatriated. But they were not going to have a second chance by kicking and screaming and letting themselves be dragged.
Right.
The other thing was the Deputy Prime Minister who arrived in Kashgar 2 weeks later and said that one of the refugees squeezed his hand so hard. That must mean that he was generally grateful for having been repatriated, forced or repatriated in the way he was, which I think is also absolutely ludicrous. But those pronouncements are part of this stage performance that the Thai politicians have decided to go along with, which, again, I think is absolutely shocking.
Right. Obviously, we're all pretty well aware of what's happening with the Trump White House at the moment. Putting that aside for a few minutes, as another analyst pointed out to me, Thailand is a signature ally to the United States, and the Secretary of State, Rubio, he was quite loud and quite vocal about this repatriation and obviously against it. Where does this type of behavior leave Thailand's relationship with the United States?
Yeah, that is a very hard question. I have also noticed how the U.S. Secretary of State protested the deportations
mm-hmm.
that Thailand carried out of these Uyghur refugees. And not only that, he also has a long history of criticizing China and also warning about the situation of these refugees in Thailand. And so for this to take place in this manner, absolutely contrary to the wishes of the U.S. Secretary of State, it is quite shocking. And one would have to imagine that there is a calculation on the part of the Thai authorities that they should bow to China
mm-hmm.
Rather than to the U.S. Of course, we also have to note the U.S. is not the only party around the world criticizing Thailand
sure.
for this. There's been demands for a long time, and notably there were several countries that even we have now learned offered Thailand to take these refugees.
That's right, yes. I was going to go there next, actually, but yep.
Yeah. So it seems to have been a calculated decision on the part of the Thai that they were going to obey the Chinese government. And then it appears to me that there's almost an agreed manner in which the Thai and the Chinese authorities are handling this. They are on the same note. They're repeating the same talking points about how this is not only legal, it's also just, it's also good, it's also the only thing that Thailand could do. These things are Chinese government talking points to help justify what Thailand did, and then now the Thai politicians are buying into it in quite an open way.
Right. Does it signal a shift further into the Chinese camp by the Thais? Thailand has been notorious over the years for trying to play off different powers against each other. Is this a continuation of that game, or we could head towards tariffs next, but how do you see this historically
yeah.
from the Thai perspective of what they are traditionally known for?
I think, of course, it has to be seen as a shift in the direction of obeying China to
mm-hmm.
To obey the wishes of the Chinese government. I think there's no doubt about that. But I also think each time I hear
yep.
This point that what is also important is that Thailand actually has committed to international law.
Mm-hmm.
They have signed the torture convention. They have not signed the refugee convention, but they have signed the torture convention, and that actually prohibits them from this kind of refoulement where you send the people to places where they will be tortured. There is a widespread testimony that refugees, prisoners in China, do run the risk of torture or are tortured.
Right.
So they're breaking international law, and they're breaking their commitment to the international community. So it's not just about the shift in the direction of China versus obeying the wishes of the United States. It's also a shift away from the international legal arrangements that we have with UN conventions that you're supposed to follow when you have signed them.
Right. There's two points in there. I'll just go back. The repatriation, for want of a better word, also occurred as Thailand launched its crackdown on the scam compounds across its borders in Myanmar, Cambodia and Laos. That was done with Chinese backing, and Beijing is understandably furious about what has happened with its organized crime element. How much was that at play in the repatriation of the Uyghurs, in that do you think the two were played out as part of the same hand?
Yes, I do. I think that on the one hand, the timing of this was the deportation of the Uyghur refugees was chosen because there was this backdrop of a crackdown on transnational organized crime with these scam centers. And that is exactly also part of the Thai-Chinese agreed upon justifications that they have. They emphasize that these are citizens of China that should be repatriated, and so they come under the same heading. The scam center criminals and victims are put in the same context as these refugees, and that I think was done to minimize this issue of how this is actually a violation of international law. To repatriate scam center criminals would not be against international law, but to take refugees and deport them where they don't want to go is against international law. And I think it was also a concretely, you know, the timing was chosen so that they would be sure that people's attention were elsewhere. There were, of course, people in Thailand paying attention to the fate of these refugees. There were people strenuously making strenuous efforts to work and ask Thailand's government, where are you? What are you doing with these refugees? Can we go and see them? Can we visit them? And to deflect that, they acted in the middle of the night, but under cover of this larger development of cracking down on scam centers.
Right, and of course, the scam centers, and with the Uyghurs, it became a big international story. It commandeered the front pages and online media for quite some time, and this was all swept aside with the earthquake in Myanmar and the devastation that it caused in Bangkok. NGOs, human rights groups of late have been issuing press statements saying, please don't forget these Uyghurs. Now, it does seem that Thailand is prepared to go it alone with China. That might be a bit of a stretch, but what recourse is there when these countries, and Thailand is certainly not the only one, when they don't live up to the standards that's expected of them by the international community, and as you were pointing out, the international legal documents that they are a signature to?
Well, I think the only recourse is the censure in international fora. Thailand is just starting as a member country in the UN Human Rights Council. Mm-hmm. And I think they should be criticized there. They should be criticized in other similar fora for having done this. It should not be forgotten. I think that is the main censure. Because the whole thing with our UN system is that it is unenforceable other than by the moral authority, by countries having signed or ratified these laws, and then they should be held to it, they should follow it. And when people flagrantly reject them and set them aside, there's no direct punishment that can be done. Countries can, of course, consider economic and other kinds of sanctions, like the U.S. put visa sanctions on Thai officials that were involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure that will deter this kind of thing. By the way, there are more Uyghurs still left in Thailand in detention, and we should not forget them. So similarly, I think international public
yep.
opinion should press on them, and hopefully there are also countries that are offering them refugee status so that they can at least be taken from Thailand and not face the fate of these who were deported.
Okay, now the United States has imposed tariffs on Thailand as it has imposed tariffs elsewhere. We understand what's going on there, and there are potential travel bans. Is this part of the thinking in the United States in terms of if Thailand and other countries don't live up to the expectations of the US Secretary of State, that you know, let the tariffs roll kind of thing? Is it possible that these are being linked behind the scenes in the corridors of power in Washington?
Well, I don't quite understand this entire global tariffs business, this politics from the United States. I don't
mm-hmm.
understand. I think it's actually not linked. I think the tariffs imposed on countries around the world by the U.S. is actually not connected to issues in any individual countries.
Yep.
But it's because of the thinking in the U.S. government on the part of the U.S. president about how the economy works and so on and so forth. So
yep.
I think it's actually
okay.
not related.
Yep.
And it seems to me that it's counterproductive for the U.S. and other Western countries to put these kinds of draconian economic punishments on countries like Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam, and so on, exactly at the point when those countries are being pressured by China to put themselves within the Chinese sphere of influence, like the Thai now have done. So it seems to me it's exactly the wrong moment to slap these kinds of tariffs, punitive tariffs, whatever the thinking and the reasoning behind that
mm-hmm.
would be, on these countries, because it simply makes them conclude that politicians in these countries who are so inclined, they will see this as proof that they should continue on this route to do what China says.
Right. Now, just going back to what you were saying earlier, how many Uyghurs are there left in Thailand? And not only Uyghurs, I mean, Bangkok has been a hub, and it's long been a magnet for people of different backgrounds, from North Koreans to Pakistani Christians and Catholics and the subcontinent, all sorts. Who is in Bangkok now? What type of refugees are we looking at? You did mention there are other Uyghurs there before.
Yes. I don't have a full count, and I think it's still unclear.
Yeah.
But there are at least 5 Uyghurs who are being imprisoned, because they have been convicted, it appears, for the same crime of entering Thailand illegally that these 40 others were accused of, the 40 that were deported.
Right.
And these, in contrast, were given prison sentences. And it was said from the Thai authorities that once those prison sentences are completed, these people will also be forced repatriated or deported. And
right.
so those are 5, but then there are also Uyghurs who are refugees in Thailand, but who are formally citizens of another Central Asian country.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Kyrgyzstan.
Right.
And of course there's the danger that Thailand would then repatriate them there. Those countries have a history of simply handing Uyghurs back to China, so in effect it would be the same as deporting them to China. But it's unclear how many there are. The Thai police chief, I believe it was, came out and said there are now no Uyghurs in detention in Thailand. I think he said that thinking that we would miss that there are some that are in prison, not detention. So it was playing on a technicality. But there are additional people that are not mentioned as Uyghur because they're citizens of other Central Asian countries.
Right.
It is true generally that Thailand has been a refuge, a destination for refugees fleeing neighboring countries and also people from elsewhere. And sadly, with this new situation, the Uyghurs have been living proof that Thailand are willing to break the commitments they have made to international law. It would seem that it's a dangerous bet that people make if they go there. I think this has a long history. I'm from Sweden, and we have a citizen that was kidnapped from Thailand under the watching eyes of Thai police, we believe.
Yep.
They have not been willing to explain what was the role of the Thai police, but Chinese agents in 2015 kidnapped our citizen Gui Minhai, who was a bookseller and writer based in Hong Kong but vacationing in Thailand. He was seized by these Chinese agents in 2015, October 17th, and smuggled, apparently by way of Cambodia, to China,
right,
where he was later also forced to confess in this same manner, and then paraded with his confession on TV several times. He's now disappeared. He's in Chinese jail, and they have even attempted to steal his citizenship. They declare that, oh, he's no longer a Swedish. They unilaterally declare he's no longer a Swedish.
How can they do that?
They put him away for 10 years.
How can they do that? Even
that
in their own minds, legally.
Yes.
How could they do that in the Chinese mindset? How can they legally take away your citizenship from another country? I know where you're driving at. I'm just trying to fathom what you're saying.
Yes. Well, I think what it shows is that China, for the Chinese authorities, the law is simply a tool to advance their interest. And it's only a pretense.
Yep.
Of course, it's illegal. What they do is they play on this same thing we saw with the Thai ministers with Uyghur refugees in Kashgar, assuring us they're fine. They forced people to say these things. So in the same way with our citizen, he was put on TV to say that he was fine. He was forced to say, I don't want help from Sweden. Of course, if you torture somebody, you pressure somebody, you keep them in solitary, you perform all kinds of torture on them that don't leave time, so you can still put people on TV and have them confess while fearing for their life if they don't perform well, they can have people say anything. So from the point of view of our country and the European Union, of which he is a citizen also, we have said this is not acceptable. We want him liberated. We want him sent home to Sweden. And the Chinese simply refuse. That is their attitude. So it's a kind of a blatant lawlessness, where they sort of fashion their own reality by claiming things and forcing people to claim things. And that there's a direct parallel with what these Thai ministers have done. And again, I really am quite shocked that the government ministers of Thailand would play along in this kind of game. Do this fake performance, assuring us that the refugees are safe, even though they know it's not the case, and even though they have this international legal commitments. So they too, they go along with this setting aside of the law, or appropriating the letter of the law to fake this new reality that pleases them and pleases China in this case.
Yep.
And I think that is actually this disregard for the law and the manipulation and playing with the law is actually the most ominous part of this entire thing.
Just to rephrase what other people have been saying, Is the Thai reaction with the Chinese, is that a sign of waning US influence in the region? I asked that for another reason, but I'll get there in a minute.
I think that could be so. This is possible, I think the key factor is that we don't quite know where the United States is going. It can seem now that the United States is going in a direction where they too don't care about human rights and international human rights law. And in that case, that would seem to give the green light for other authoritarian regimes or governments like Thailand's, which is still a democracy, imperfect but still a democracy, to go along with this kind of game that we have seen with China. It's as if that is green lighted. So it would be not only a matter of Thailand shifting sides or leaning more towards China than towards the US, but it's also a matter of leaning in the direction of de-emphasizing universal human rights, setting them aside, and instead pursuing national interest and money in the shape of trade and tourism and so on. Yes, that's.
I asked that because I found it extraordinary that the American academic Paul Chambers would be charged under lèse majeste laws without saying too much, because none of us want to get in too much trouble. We still have to travel through Bangkok, but the charges seem a little out there, particularly given what's happened. And it came after the tariffs, it came after the Uyghurs, it came after the Chinese-backed crackdown. Why would they do that?
Yes, it does look like it may be part of a piece that, as I was saying, the Thai authorities have felt they have a green light, they have an interest in disregarding international law and setting aside human rights. And it's, I think, inescapable to think that this is quite possibly why they're also treating Paul Chambers, the scholar, the American scholar, in the way they are treating him. Of course, there have been many, many people that have been charged under this lèse majeste law, and they have been also criticized by many people inside and outside of Thailand as overly draconian and denying free speech and so on. But in this case, with an American scholar who apparently have committed no other crime, to be accused in this manner, and without it being substantiated,
Well,
it
I
is
mean,
very suspicious.
well,
I don't know the details.
the argument was that he had been charged because of a headline that appeared in the ISIS bulletin that was sent out to people for an upcoming conference. Now, both you and I have no doubt attended academic conferences over the years. It's the institution that is responsible for promoting that conference and the newsletters that are sent out and the headlines that are written. I mean, if you're part of a conference, you're not going to sit down and write the newsletter and the headline up top that goes out promoting what you'll be doing at such and such a date. It is rather confusing.
Yes, it reminds me of the Chinese saying where they say mo xiao, that means when you need a reason, you find one. When you need a reason to act against someone or lock them up, you find one or manufacture one. That is what happened with our citizen who was kidnapped from Thailand. And I think this saying that he's responsible for what the conference meeting heading implicated, and that turns him into a criminal in Thailand, it does seem ludicrous. Well, again, I don't know the details of what they will claim, but it does seem that they are looking for a reason, And from the reports I have seen, he's someone that has been researching the military, which has a prominent role
indeed
in Thailand, in Thai politics and society. And I would think it's a legitimate topic of research if you're in an open country with academic freedom. But that topic, the military itself might have felt is off limits. They cannot be studied, they cannot be discussed. And so they turn to this kind of method to accuse him of lèse majesté. That one interpretation, and it does seem quite plausible.
Right. And on that note, Magnus, thank you very much for your time. And I hope we get to do this again in due course. And one can only hope that the Uyghurs that are left in Bangkok, along with all the other refugee asylum seekers, will find a better outcome.
Yes, I hope so too, and I hope everyone listening to this will sense the urgency for those still left there. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you very much, Magnus.